October 5th.
Okay, what's so great about October 5th?
It's 5 days from October 10th.
Right.
G-A-B-F.
But that starts on... Yeah, that does start on the 10th. Then yes. Yeah, but... I'm excited. Yes. Are you excited?
I'm excited.
How are you going to get there?
How am I going to get there? I'm going to fly there on Southwest on standby buddy list.
On Wednesday?
We still have to work that out. It's either going to be Thursday morning if there's plenty of empty seats, and if there's not a plenty of empty seats, then I'm flying out Wednesday, yeah.
Okay. So I should arrive in Denver at around 11:30 a.m. or so.
You will take these.
Okay.
Because you don't want me being stuck in Chicago with these. Even though that's Friday, so... I really should be there by then.
Yeah.
Those are the Pints for Prostates tickets. The Denver Rare Beer Tasting, courtesy of Gary Frank.
Woohoo! Mega. Ultra fan. Third member of Craft Beer Radio, Gary Frank.
Look at that. Color laser printer and everything.
Wow.
Woohoo!
Okay, I guess the big news is the shutdown. The shutdown.
You see my tweet this afternoon about the... I didn't realize the anthropomorphic NASA robots collected paychecks. Yeah. You like that or no?
I mean, I'm over the whole being upset that they're doing anthropomorphizing robots.
But they're not tweeting during the shutdown.
Well, they can't.
If the robots were doing it, there's... No, they don't collect paychecks.
There's actually something called the Anti-Deficiency Act, which requires that people don't...
It's a robot.
Doesn't matter. Now, the weird thing is that JPL is not completely funded by NASA.
Okay.
So the public outreach stuff is, but the robot's still doing... The rovers are still working, but they can't. They can still collect data, but they can't analyze that data.
Right. So, well, I mean, that makes sense, right? Like, I was wondering, like, could something fall into disrepair, and not be able to correct itself and ruin mission output, right? But if it's collecting data,
well, I mean, some of them are. I mean, like Hubble has gone into safe mode. They keep track of these things because they are considered property, and property isn't, and government property is not just let go of. But people are. 97% of NASA is gone right now.
So the guys are just keeping the lights on, basically, making sure.
There's essentially people working on the ISS, and then there are people who just are keeping making sure the lights are on. There's a few other things, like there was there's a Mars mission, MAVEN, which was which needed to be launched within the next couple. I think by December, and any delay would put that on track for missing the orbital window, and then in that case you're missing 2 years, and then you're adding huge amounts of money onto a project. So they actually did find a way to fund that, so that will still go through, but you won't be able to see it because NASA TV is offline,
right?
All this other stuff. So the shutdown is terrible. Terrible, horrible, no good, very bad thing. You guys who know, who've listened to us, know Jeff and I are going to be sympathetic to the Democratic side. There's no question about it. The whole GOP obstructionism thing is very foul to me. But what can we do except for wait?
Vote them all out.
We can't. That's the problem.
Yeah, I got a Republican congressman.
But you live in a strongly red district, right?
Which one's red?
Republican.
Yeah, it is. So
it'd be really hard for you to change. That's the weird thing about Congress is that every poll of Congress, everybody hates Congress, but they all love their individual congressman.
I don't.
I'm generalizing.
He's a first-termer anyway, so...
Is he a Tea Partier type?
Probably not. I really don't know much about him other than he's Mike Kelly. He owns the Kelly Automotive Dealerships you've probably heard of or seen on TV.
I think, let's see. I'll do Mike Kelly Tea Party. Let's see. On the Tea Party, where does Mike Kelly stand? Region's newest congressman, Mike Kelly, is a Tea Party movement favorite.
Ha! Dickhead.
Co-founder of the Tea Party movement in the area.
Okay, so he's a Tea Partier.
Yes.
Son of a bitch.
So, yeah. I live in Allegheny, and that's strongly blue, so...
Right. Yeah, I can still place my votes, whatnot. I still got the senators.
But right now it's the House that's causing the major issue, not the Senate. And it's really just a small point. I don't even want to talk about it. It just
okay. Makes me angry. What's next on the list? Nobel Prizes get shut down too?
No, Nobel Prizes, fortunately, are not the subject of the shutdown. They are going to be announced, at least the science ones are going to be announced on the 8th. Probably for physics it's going to be the Higgs, but people don't know exactly who is going to... The Nobel Prize can't be given to teams. It has to be given to individual people.
Mm-hmm.
And while Higgs seems like an obvious choice, there were a lot of people who came up with the same idea at the time. It's just sort of... Higgs had went slightly further with it. But it's also, I mean, it's based on something that Kip Anderson came up with in terms of spontaneous symmetry breaking and superconductivity. And that followed through to...
I mean, so they can give the Nobel Prize to...
They can only give the Nobel Prize to up to three people.
Right. But they could be competitors, more or less. You know, people that have arrived at the same basic thing. So it's called the Higgs boson, but there's other people that
there were about seven people who you could possibly give it
right,
to.
Right,
like Gerald DeHooft is another one. There's lots of different people who you could...
I'm sure not all seven are equally...
Yeah, actually. Worthy.
Oh, yeah? All
because,
seven?
Because, you know, the papers came out at roughly the same time.
And Higgs did the best marketing, I guess, huh?
Well,
got his name on it.
It wasn't... He didn't... He's a kind of self-effacing guy, and he's not the kind of guy who would be... It sort of landed on him somewhat by default. And because, like I said, I mean, his paper went the furthest by suggesting, essentially, that you could look for Essentially, CC was saying you can look for a particle. It had to do with because people think the Higgs boson is something that it's not. People think the Higgs boson is sort of active, or the Higgs boson is really just sort of it's a sound wave in the Higgs field. It's not it's not an active. I mean, it's complicated, but it's a density wave inside the Higgs field. It's not the actual interaction that causes the massive thing, but. Here to there. He was the one who first showed that this thing. But the other people were predicting the same mechanism based essentially on Kip Anderson's work with spontaneous symmetry breaking and Cooper pairs in BCS superconductivity. So there's a lot of ways to go with that one. And so that's what is being looked at. But I mean, there are other possibilities for the physics prize, but Higgs seems to be the one that's almost certainly going to make it. Because I mean,
right.
That it's still pretty huge. Something that's almost entirely theoretical was shown to be.
So, like, so for the Higgs thing, you got seven people who did the theoretical work, right? Mm-hmm. Then you got the CERN guys who did the experimental work,
right?
So you would think a CERN name should be one of the three.
Of one of the experiments or director of CERN or something, because there's. Yeah, I mean, you know, coming up with a theory is one thing, but proving it experimentally is...
Right, I mean, that's Nobel Prize worthy as well.
Well,
right.
I mean, just coming up with a theory is not Nobel Prize worthy. That's the thing. I mean, it has to be shown to be experimentally true.
Right.
So...
But also being proven right.
Well, in terms of physics. I mean, in math...
But being proven right...
Yeah.
It's like, hey, He had a Nobel idea, you know. I don't know what's usual or unusual. I don't play fantasy Nobel prizes, you know. I don't know how this normally works. You know, it seems crazy that there's seven people that thought up the same basic explanation for the Higgs particle. And then you got the whole huge team at CERN who experimentally verified it.
Right.
So, yeah. And you can only give it to three people.
Yeah. It's a rough choice.
They should almost give it to science.
just science. Just broad. Okay, everybody who we consider a scientist gets a dollar.
Get Jesse Pinkman to accept science, bitch.
Science, bitch. Did you hear about? There's this Christian talking point going around where they have this thing against evolution. They have 300 different doctors from doctors in various sciences from very high institutions, you know, Harvard, you know, Ivy League, et cetera, that say that there are they're saying there are severe problems with evolution, et cetera. Basically, they're supporting intelligent design. 300. And that sounds like a lot, right? But when you look at the list, nearly all of them have nothing to do with biology, first of all. mathematics professors or computer science doctors. And what the National Academy of Sciences or somebody did is they made a list of... They decided to do Project Steve, and it was just... people from extremely good institutions who are doctors in biological science whose first name was Steve, and it's over like 3,000 people. So the support, you know, would say it's definitely nothing to intelligent design. So I always like that thing. But the thing is, like, okay, if you have 300, it sounds like a lot to people, but if I say 3 cents to your $300, that's a large difference, right? And now if I say 300 to 3 million, that's the same magnitude order of difference. Mm-hmm. And there are well over 3 million people who are, you know, doctors of science who are totally into evolution. So that 300 thing is totally insignificant. Thoughts?
I'm going to sound like a horrible one of those militaristic atheists at this point, I think, right? Uh-huh. But you have someone in science, educated in the ways of science, and they're a creationist. How can you trust their decision-making ability and things like that?
People can be good at compartmentalizing beliefs.
Yeah.
You have somebody like Francis Collins, who runs the National Health Organization, part of the Genome Project, evangelical Christian. But he says he puts, you know, when he goes into the lab... he puts away those beliefs, and he works from simply empirical. When he's outside the lab, he's an evangelical Christian. I don't get it either.
Right.
But your mind and my mind don't work.
How do you put it away, though? I mean, if you think there's something out there that can't be proven experimentally, and your job is running experiments and observing the results...
You know, there's...
I'm not saying they're all falsifying results. I'm not saying that, but... You either believe in science or you believe in magic.
Well, you believe in...
you believe in the scientific method. Right. And that's what I meant to say by science.
Yeah.
If you believe in the scientific method and you believe in a fairy tale...
Well, you know, you could go the route of Stephen Jay Gould and say non-overlapping magisteria. Which is that, you know...
You're making up words. It doesn't mean you're right.
No, I mean, I agree with you, but this kind of gets into another thing I want to talk about.
I mean, I've worked with some people in the past who ridiculously religious, ridiculously mm-hmm. Tea Party, ridiculously...
All Tea Parties are religious, too. I mean... Right.
But it just, you know, it's like... I've had the same thought, like... Like, I need you to make rational decisions all the time. Mm-hmm. But the bullshit you told me, the same guy that had that hydrogen generator, right?
Yeah.
Well, which you never got done.
there's sort of the conspiracy theory mindset too. I mean, there are people who, I mean, let's face it. Not everyone who considers themselves an atheist is completely, no one is completely logical in their thought. We all have blind sides. And mm-hmm. we all have things that we are, you know, we have a tendency to believe more than others. You know, I've been against string theory for a long time. It may turn out to be true. Or at least it may turn out to be, you know, a way through some of the problems mm-hmm. that we have. But, you know, it would take an extraordinary thing for me to... I mean, less extraordinary than other things. I mean, it would take evidence, good evidence for me to believe it.
I'm thinking like what I heard myself just say, and I know there's some faithful people that listen. Mm-hmm. It's tough for me because part of me says that, like, how can I trust you to make a rational decision? And then, but there's this other part of me, there's probably a majority part, which is like,
we make irrational decisions all the time.
Yeah, I respect your like my sister, right? Catholic, mm-hmm. all that stuff. I respect her. You know, I grew up Catholic, and I've told the story before. Like, my mom's like, you know, maybe you need to find a different religion. You know, my mom's trying to like push me off onto like evangelical or something mm-hmm. else, right? Like, maybe Catholicism isn't for you, but something else. And mm-hmm. that made her feel better that I wasn't an atheist, you know. And I'm like, it's not the Catholicism. I respect the doctrine in the Catholic Church, other than the boy touching. I respect the sacraments. I respect that, all that stuff, right? If my mom asked me to go to church, go to Christmas Mass, Easter Mass, something like that, I would go. Mm-hmm. I would respectfully decline taking communion because I know what they believe communion is. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe it, so I shouldn't be eating the communion wafer, you know, and taking in that sacrament.
And let's also face it, you also feel it's pretty silly. I mean, let's not...
See, I don't think
let's
it's...
Let's not gloss over the fact that you know, yes, you respect somebody's, you know, belief in something, but you also...
I don't know if I wouldn't say... I wouldn't go as far as silly. Maybe I've always, always interpreted the sacrament.
Wait, so you believe that transubstantiation of cracker into flesh and wine into blood is
so
not silly?
Maybe I never bought that. Maybe I always bought that there was a metaphor there. But the intent... I know it's not metaphor. I know it's not metaphor. But I know that I shouldn't. I want to respect their. So, not the belief that it is literally the flesh of Christ.
Right.
But I want to respect their beliefs that it is a sacred sacrament. And. I feel it's respectful not to go up and eat the wafer.
Yes.
Unless you believe.
No, I agree.
Not necessarily believe in transubstantiation, but believe in the sacrament. Believe in you are getting a blessing. Mm-hmm. Okay? Let's just stop at blessing, right? You are getting a blessing when you eat that thing, mm-hmm. right? I don't believe I'm getting a blessing. They do. Communion is one of the biggest sacraments in their religion. Out of respect for my mother and my sister and all reasonable Catholics, I would not eat the wafer, mm-hmm. you know? And, but you know, it wasn't Catholicism that scared me away from going to church. You know?
Yeah.
I respect Catholicism way more than evangelical Christians. You know,
there's at least there's a strong history of, I want to say rational thought, although it's not quite that much, but there's a strong history of,
but they're also set. I mean, they're determined, you know,
yeah.
they don't bring in rock bands into mass to draw in more people.
Right.
And they don't put movie projectors up to draw in more people.
Right.
You know, they're not populist religion. I see evangelical Christians, and forgive me, I don't go, you know, very ever, you know, but I see many religions like those being populist, mm-hmm. doing whatever it takes to bring in the people, to put the people in the seats. In essence, you know, I'm going to be a little harsh here, to raise money, right?
Well,
but do whatever
and
it takes to raise
me,
money.
There's also, forgive me as well, there's also a lot of cult-like things that go on here. The whole cult-like mentality where when somebody new comes in, you overwhelm them with, you know, love and you know, you overwhelm them with mm-hmm. you know, with support. And you do all these things that you know, that are very typical.
But you know, to get back to it, you know, they seem very populist, very bending, you know, blowing in the breeze to attract the audiences, where I respect the Catholic Church as, this is the way it is, this is religion,
mm-hmm.
fuck you, you're going to do it this way. I respect that in religion, actually.
You know, there are those evangelicals who say Catholics are not Christians. So there's a wide variety of thought out there, you know, which again shows you, you know, how kind of silly this whole thing is. Because if there was one true religion, then wouldn't there not be 8,000 different versions?
Yeah,
and that's the thing about science. While there are people who are, you know, experimenting on the edges of the unknown, there are things that we know pretty strongly, and they're true regardless of what culture you grew up in, regardless mm-hmm. of where you are in time or in space. So you can do the test and it will show that to be true. Whereas, you know, culture and where you grew up and all that totally changes your whole religious identity. Now, that's not to say that, here's the thing about religion. I think people, who are not atheists, who think that atheists are just sort of scoffing at religion, that we don't get it. We get it. You know, I understand.
Well, we think we get it, but we don't have that.
No.
We don't feel blessed, right? We don't feel internal warm fuzzy that makes us.
Well, no, I understand that feeling, that warm fuzzy. I understand that feeling of being connected. I understand how wonderful and amazing that feels. I just see that it comes from not just religious sources, entirely secular sources, and that it can all come down to essentially materialistic observations. And when you just Occam's razor that, there's no need to put the other step on there. If this can all be explained through materialistic observations, through naturalistic observations, then there's no point in adding the extra theological dimension simply because humans have a tendency to personify things.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. I mean, you walk into one of these evangelical churches, you're going to have all these best friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be an important person in a social circle. Well, that's pretty addicting. Right?
Absolutely.
That's really addicting. That is the place to be. You could have the same, if you, in the right, you know, circumstances. There's no reason it has to be a church that has these friendly people that make you feel important.
Right.
It could be anywhere where you can find friendly people that can make you feel important.
Now, the caveat would be that I would say someone who is religious, who is thinking along these same lines and sort of trying to think logically with us, would say, when you're in the church, you're not only part of a group of humans, you're part of something even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You're part of some sort of, you know,
humans and endorphin.
you're part of this.
I understand.
This universal good power or something. And so you're sort of glomming onto that. But
right. But like, you know, that touch of God, that's probably just endorphins, right? I mean,
I think endorphins are a component. I think it's more complicated than that.
Right.
But I think it's an evolutionary response that because we grew up, because we came up as social apes.
Mm-hmm.
And being part of the crowd is...
I grew up a social ape.
We are social apes. We still are. Being, you know, being a part of a group that being a part of a group is much more powerful than being on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And it just works. And in order to understand things, particularly when humanity started out, you could see the pattern of personifying everything, making everything to be some sort of spirit, have some sort of
it was the
capacity for consciousness.
It was the rationalization of the day.
Yeah.
Because there was no tools to better rationalize.
Absolutely.
Something.
And it worked then for building civilization. You know, it worked for a while for collecting knowledge.
God's up there. He's like, why the fuck do they still believe in me? There's no way they should still believe in me. They've figured everything out. Why do they still believe in me?
This goes back to, I don't know if you've ever taken a look at presuppositional apologetics.
We've talked about this before. That sounds really familiar.
But it's a really nasty kind of very deceptive argument. Because there are lots of these apologetics, which are arguments for existence of God, like the cosmological argument, or there are a whole host of different apologetics. But the presuppositional apologetics try to sort of trump them all by essentially saying that God is the only way that the universe is intelligible. Mm-hmm. In other words, that in order for you to have any basis for logic itself, God has to exist. Otherwise, you have no basis for logic, which is very, very silly. Because
it's a circular argument, right?
It's an extremely circular argument. You know, there it doesn't prove any case at all. I mean, everyone has to go with. I think it's absolutely true that we have to go with some fundamental presupposition to begin with. Otherwise, we fall into hard solipsism.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that the naturalist will say reality exists, and the basis of, you know, all these logical stuff and everything is reality. And the presuppositionalists will say, well, how can you confirm that reality exists without having something beyond that? And we're just saying it's a necessary component. You either accept reality exists or you fall into hard solipsism.
Right. I mean, we've talked about this before, right? I mean,
yeah.
A scientist has to believe that observations are accurate.
Right. Right? But the thing that we have that presuppositionalists don't have is that we have concrete, repeatable, demonstrable evidence of effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, and so they say, well, you know, how can you trust your reasoning if you don't understand where that reasoning comes from? And it's a totally circular argument that just tries to run you in circles and confuse you, mm-hmm, without actually having an actual argument for God.
Why does logic seem logical?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Why does logic seem logical?
Do you use your logic to come up with morality? Well, where does that logic come from? And it's like,
mm-hmm,
you just want to smash your head against the wall because it comes from observations. The world. Well, how do you know your observations? Well, because I'm not a solipsist.
Well, it's also a series of observations and encounters that everyone shares.
Right.
On the basic, I mean, not the theoretical physics part where you know about bosons and all that stuff, but, you know, on...
Well, I can communicate to you.
Right, right. But on the basic level, everyone shares the same reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're building.
Right. Everyone shares a demonstrable reality that we can demonstrate to each other.
Right.
And if we're both educated in a similar way, we both have the same, mm-hmm, you know, language, we can discuss these fundamentally abstract ideas and come up with similar conclusions.
Right.
which you cannot do with the God concept, which is shown again by the fact that there are 8,000 different Christian denominations, et cetera, et cetera.
What else you got on there?
Have you heard about this other iPhone security issue?
The one where you cancel the FaceTime or something like that? That one? Or?
No. This is... So, Apple put this whole thing in there where you can't turn off the Find My iPhone thing unless you put in your password. So, if somebody grabbed your phone...
Right.
You can... They can't turn it off without having your password. So that.
So, but what about putting in airplane mode stuff?
That's the thing. Oh, okay. Someone could just turn
it. Yeah, that was the first version.
And put it in airplane mode.
Yeah, it's
and then work on cracking your password.
Well, I mean, you put it in airplane mode, but if you really want to crack the iPhone, you turn off the iPhone. You take it to a Faraday cage, you turn on the iPhone, and you crack the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's that determined is going to the airplane mode in the control panel for that level of determination is not a big difference in security, right?
Right.
Now, for the normal thieves that are just heisting an iPhone, it might be a boon for them. I would like to see statistics for pocket-picked iPhones and how many are recovered from Find My iPhone anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Because if it's not a large percentage, then this is just all a red herring.
I also wonder what happens if they just take out the SIM card.
It depends. So you put in a new SIM card, it gets internet. Is the iPhone still the old iPhone? It's still the Find My iPhone app still going to be the same old phone, right?
Yeah,
It's not like a brain transplant at that point.
It still gets the serial number and identifies. Yeah,
I think that's a small one. Some of the other flaws, because they added so much to the lock screen,
right?
And most of it's great usability, but there's like you can take a photo, then you can go to the photo gallery, and you can say send this photo, and look, you can see your whole contact list,
right?
You know, and then there was another one where they were, if you have two iPhones, and you make a call, and then you switch over to FaceTime, but then you cancel, you can get in, and that's even with 7.02, so it's still an active vulnerability, but.
You can just turn off your control center, and that solves a lot of the problem. But then
you lose some of the best feature. Yeah. The best feature in iOS 7, in my opinion, is the control center. Just put a passphrase on your phone, and don't be a person who's going to be. Don't be a person of a targeted attack, and you're going to be okay.
Wear tight pants and keep your phone. Don't run out with your phone, because this is what I heard is people are. I admit I took this from Martin Sargent. A few people are walking out on the streets, and they have their phones out, and people are just bonking them over the head, and grabbing their phone and running. And people are like, because he was on This Week in Tech a few weeks ago.
Okay.
And people were asking what people do that, and he's like, yeah, I've done it. I only knew that because I don't listen to This Week in Tech, but I have him on my Twitter feed, and he sounds that. So, yeah, that was a funny episode.
I do have him on Twitter, but he only pops up every once in a while.
He's not active Twitterer.
I haven't really watched any of his stuff in quite a while. I liked him when he was on Unscrewed.
Yeah, he's not, he's working in advertising now. He doesn't.
Okay.
He doesn't really get out much and stuff anymore. Doing lots of flying lately.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You're a jet setter.
Yeah. This is, we did the St. Louis and the week after Philadelphia. Now, this is going to be, wow, this is gonna be 4 hours in the air, over 4 hours. Cause I'm first flying to Charlotte. That's an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. And then it's a 3 hour flight to Denver. The way back is one way, but
right.
Connected. So it's just, this will be my last flight for a while, I think, but still. Been a lot of flying, and I don't find it that unnerving or anything. It's pretty much routine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been... I did a lot of flying that app, and even then, I don't know. It's routine. I still like looking out the window.
Yeah.
I still like, you know, getting that bird's eye view of cities and things like that. I'm a little too rational to get nervous about flying.
I just slept all the way from Philadelphia back to Pittsburgh last week.
Like a 22-minute flight, right?
Yeah, it's like a 45-minute flight. But yeah, I mean, it's... I was like, put my head back, and then, oh, we're landing. Real quick.
There's been flights I wish I could fall asleep on. And then there's been flights where I've, like, when I came back from India, I didn't sleep the whole way, but I slept at the perfect times, because when I landed in Pittsburgh, I hit the ground running, you know. Mm-hmm. I came back from 10.5 time zones away. And, you know, stayed up the whole day, went to sleep, woke up the next morning at normal time. You know, I slept at the right times on the airplanes. Not that I had a guide or anything. It just worked out that way.
And, yeah, I have a feeling that Thursday is going to be kind of a rough day for me, because the flight is at 6:50 in the morning. And then I arrive at 11:30, and then there's a GABF. So and we have to arrive early because we got to get our media credentials.
Right. 5:15 is the entry to the hall.
Well, you have to arrive before 4 o'clock to get our media credentials.
I don't have to. I was looking at the media credentials are open the whole time.
No,
so you don't have
no.
to.
Didn't you see the email we got?
I saw the one email that I got. I don't know if maybe it wasn't the most recent. It said media credentials are open until like 9:30 at night.
I don't think that's right. Well, we'll look it up. Anyway, we should probably get on with the show.
I guess, if you want to. Media check-in hours. Oh, no, Thursday's 10:30 to 8 p.m. You saw Wednesday, 4 p.m.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right.
Bye-bye.